Hey, thank you for having me over. God bless you. It's good to see Northeast Christian Church. Many of you, some of you know who I am. Most of you probably don't. My name is Roger Ferguson, and Seth was looking for somebody to fill in this week, and he was looking for anybody, I guess, because he asked me to do it. And he was asking him, I said, well, that's kind of a privilege, you know. And he said something about, well, we were just looking for, we didn't really want anybody, and you were about as close to nothing as we could get. So here I am today. All right. I'm the pastor of the Clifton Christian Church. That church is, gosh, 106 years old, and I'm darn near as old and been there about as long. But it's neat to be able to have a good relationship with you guys, and a lot of things I think we can do as a church together. So God bless you, and I hope that we'll always and be get stronger and stronger in our friendship in the Lord. Now, if you'll bear with me just for a minute, I want to talk to you today about a subject that's very important to me and I think is very important for us as we walk with Christ. So just watch this little one-minute video, and we're going to talk about discipleship. Folks, as we talk about discipleship this morning, one of the things that I want you to understand is that the world has drastically changed from especially like when I was a child going to church. Things are a lot different, and we as a church, we need to wise up and to understand what it takes to truly be a follower of Christ in the world in which we live today. Now, for the first 1,500 years of the existence of the church, it was what was known as the period of pre-modernism. And during that time, people couldn't read or write. They just listened to whatever the priest would tell them. They had their Bibles chained to the pulpits in their great cathedrals. But when the 1500s rolled around, what happened was is there was an invention of the printing press. And all of a sudden, people could have the Bible even in their own language. There was at that time the Protestant Reformation that took place. And there was all kinds of movement towards education and information and for that day, technology. And it was changing the world. And so people just thought, if we just learn enough, we will get really smart about the things even of God. And so we built great buildings like this building. And we gathered together to hear lectures and to understand what it is that God wanted. And we thought, that's going to be the answer for the world and Christ. However, that was modernism. We have moved from modernism now to what all philosophers call the postmodern period. It actually began around the 1980s. People became more sarcastic. You couldn't sell people things anymore. People, how many of you get phone calls at home that you don't answer? Okay. Why? Because you're kind of skeptical. They don't really want to do anything for you. They want to do what? They want to sell you something. And people have gotten that same idea about the church as well. And so how we approach Christianity is going to have to change. And really what happens is it's going to bring us back to this concept of discipleship. Now, so what I want to talk to you about, that what discipleship has to be now, is moving from the crowd to the committed. Are we just going to be part of the crowd? or we're going to be part of the committed. And we're going to use that little passage in Matthew for a better understanding of it. Let me give you a modern day example of what's taken place in the world. If you recall, when we look at these things, there was in the mid of the past century, there was this rise of communism, especially in Russia and China. Now in Russia, because of the modernistic approach, education's the answer, they built great cathedrals. People gathered together and they had their priests and they preached to the folks and they thought with this education, they will grow as followers of Christ. But when communism came along and attacked in Russia the church itself, it emptied the buildings, and even yet today, hardly anyone is a follower of Christ in Eastern Europe. However, in China, of all places, they didn't have great buildings. And so what happened, the Chinese came in and says, you know, we don't like Christianity, we want it out of the way, and I tell you, in order to stop it, they said, you can never have a gathering of more than 50 people. Well, lo and behold, the Chinese got together in 50 people over here, and then they got another group of 50 over here, and another group of 50 over here, and in their small groups, you know what happened? Christianity exploded. To this very day, do you know where more Christians are coming to Christ than anywhere else in the world? Today, it is communist China. Because they are what? They're becoming just simply followers of Christ rather than having a bunch of people just sitting in chairs. They're actually doing what it means to be a disciple. Now, when we stop and we think about that just a little bit, Martin Luther actually said, you know, a religion that gives nothing, costs nothing, suffers nothing, guess what? It is worth nothing. One other guy named Berrigan, he was an activist priest, but I like what he had to say. He said, if you want to follow Jesus today, you'd better look good on wood. Because things are changing, folks. They really are. And if you look around you, and I'm not trying to be political, but I'm going to tell you the truth, we are not very far from seeing some real changes here in the United States. I personally think that we're about one Supreme Court justice away from having the church under complete fire. To where they're going to say that, oh, you are like any other business, therefore you're going to pay regular income tax like a corporation. They're going to look at your building and your properties that you're here, and they're going to say, you know what, you need to start paying real estate property taxes. And then they're going to have all kinds of other regulations, and you know what's going to do to Northeast Christian Church? Same thing it would do to my church. Practically run it out of business. Will this church exist if you didn't have this building? Come together? You need to be prepared, and the way we prepared is by being real, genuine, I call them followers of Jesus or disciples. And that's important for us to do. And you know, we have a difficult time in this world, and here's what's going on even right now, and we don't understand it. When it comes to persecution, according to the statistics from the World Evangelistic Encyclopedia, that since the death of Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago, 43 million Christians have become martyrs. And we usually think it was way back when. But guess what? Over 50% of the 43 million have taken place in this last century. Here's what else is going on. More than 200 million Christians today face persecution. Every day. And sadly, 60% of those are their children. And every day, today, 2016, there are over 300 people who are killed for their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, why am I saying all this? We have been insulated from that kind of stuff here in the United States. No guarantees. But are we still going to be disciples? Is the question. This guy, now you, most of you out here are pretty young, you don't even remember this guy. But there was a comedian that came over from Russia by the name of Yakov Smirnov, okay? And if you're a little bit older, you remember his schnick. And he had one joke that he loved to tell. And he was saying, on my first shopping trip here in the United States, how great it is. He says, I walked down the aisle and I saw powdered milk. And it said, you just add water and voila, you get milk. Wow. And then I went a little bit further, and they had powdered orange juice. And so I looked at that, and I said, you just add water, and voila, you have orange juice. And he says, then what really blew me away is I went down the aisle a little further, and I saw baby powder. And I said to myself, wow, what a country, you know. You know, folks, listen. Somewhere we've been convinced in this country as Christians that when you become a Christian, all you do is you just add water to them. And once we add water to them, all of a sudden they have become a Christian and a real follower of Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, I need to read my Bible and pray once in a while. I need to go to church. But, you know, in the end, I'm still going to go and live my life the way I want to live it and do the things that I want to do. And because of that, I'm sure God's still going to take me to heaven. Do you really think that's what God intended? Jesus has called us to be his disciples. And there is a difference. Now, over at Clifton Christian Church, we have a vision statement that we really try to adhere to. And the vision statement simply is this. I was going to say, if you're on my staff and don't know the vision statement, you're not there long. But anyway, reaching the world for Jesus, one person at a time, by making biblical disciples, or as we call them, Jesus followers, through intentional relationships. Everything's changing in our culture, Northeast Church. You're not going to build real disciples by having people have their backsides sitting in chairs on Sunday. There's got to be change somehow inside to become real followers of Christ. And that's what we want. Now, Jesus saw this. Let me give you a text here. In this passage of Scripture, we see that there's a distinction between the crowds and the disciples. And so over in Matthew 8, let's look at what it says. It says, when Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Well, then a teacher of the law came and said, teacher, I'll follow you wherever you go. But Jesus replied, listen, foxes have dens, birds have nests. The Son of Man has no place to lay his head. And then another disciple said to him, okay, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. But Jesus told him, no, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Now let's back up by taking a closer look at verse 18. It says that when Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross over to the other side of the lake. Now Jesus had been preaching near the city of Capernaum. He had cast out demons and he had healed people and he had fed them, and the people were excited about the miraculous things that Jesus could do. And so he attracted what? Crowds. People wanted to be near this Jesus. They wanted him to do things for them as he was ministering to them. But in the middle of it, as there became so many people pressed in on him, they were down on the beach, there was all these few thousand people up there, Jesus said, okay, it's time to go to the other side of the lake. Now, some people speculated, was it because Jesus didn't like the crowd? What was it? Now, I think it was because Jesus saw something in the crowd that disturbed him. Do you know what Jesus saw in the crowd? I believe that Jesus looked in the crowd and he saw a bunch of people who were following him for what they could get from him. And it was time that they understood that he was wanting them to be his followers. He didn't want them following him based on his miracles, but he wanted them to follow him because they really wanted to change to be like Jesus. Now, folks, listen. There is a big difference in today's culture and crowds today than what has taken place in the past. I believe in our country, there is supposedly more than 40 million people who claim to be born again Christians, those who are fully devoted followers of Christ. But the most of them are just a part of the crowd. And then you have those that we could say, I wonder how many are fully devoted to Jesus. Well, let me draw a distinction, if I can, between the two. For one thing, the crowd there in Jesus, they loved Jesus. They sought him for the help they could bring. Jesus loved them. Jesus was kind to them. Jesus wanted to help them all that he could. But they were there because Jesus could help them with the trouble in their lives. And if you're here and you're kind of new to this thing, that's where you're at. Jesus does want to help you with the trouble in your life. But if you've been here in this church for a long time, let me tell you, a real disciple, though, will stop following Jesus out of, say, what else can you do for me today, and the hunger for the things that he can give you, and you're going to really start hungering just for Jesus. The difference. The crowd, they enjoyed listening to Jesus' teachings. And a lot of people today, you know what? Chris, your band was great today. Didn't you think they were good? And it's nice to be able to worship in this room, and it's a pleasurable thing. But if you're just here to have a little bit of enjoyment, you're missing why you're here, okay? Because you see, a real Jesus follower, a real disciple, what you are coming for is that you want to think like Jesus. You want to pray like Jesus. You want to be like Jesus. That's what a disciple is. The crowd, they wanted a Savior to rescue them from all of their problems. A real disciple will want Jesus to have rule over his life totally and completely. The crowd that Jesus was escaping from and going in the boat to the other side, they had received what they needed from Jesus, and they fully just intended to go on with their own lives the way they've always lived them. A real follower of Jesus will give up everything and go join Jesus in his work, because you'll see that's the most important thing you can do. You see, folks, the simplest definition that you get out of the dictionary, for an example, for a disciple, it's one who is a student and learns from another and follows a master. It's someone whose life, though, is also shaped by the teaching of that master. Listen, in the Bible gives us a clear definition. When Jesus' last words, go in the world, make disciples, earlier Jesus had told him, he said, here's what a disciple is. Listen carefully. A disciple is somebody who is going to do nothing less than just simply follow Jesus. And in the midst of following Jesus, you're going to be changed by Jesus. Your life is not yours anymore. It's his, and it's going to change. And the third thing that's going to happen is that you're going to say, not only am I following Jesus and I am changed by Jesus, but now I am joining Jesus to be about whatever it is that he wants me to be about, which is his business. That's what it is. Let me put it this way. Let's say I owned a company. I don't, but let's say I did. Right? And I chose one of you to be the executive vice president because this company is growing so great that I'm going to take it overseas. And so I'm going to take it over into Europe, and I'm going to be gone 6 months or 9 months. And while I'm gone overseas 6 months or 9 months, I'm going to be sending back letters and educational stuff for you to look at and for you to do while I'm gone. So all of a sudden, then I take off overseas, you're in charge, and I'm gone for 9 months establishing the company overseas. But when I get back home to the home office, I come driving up the drive, and I say, you know, man, there's weeds everywhere. Nobody even mowed the yard. There's some windows out front that are broken. I walk in, I see the receptionist there, and she's chewing her gum, doing her nails, and hardly says hi. And I said, what's going on here? And then I see the carpet's dirty, waste baskets haven't been emptied, and I say, where is that executive vice president that's supposed to take care of this place while I was gone? And they said, well, I think he's down the hall. So I just go bursting down the hall, and I bump into him as he's coming out of the sales rep room where they had been playing chess together all morning. And I say, hey, what's going on? Get into my office. And so we go into my office, and guess what? They turned my office into a TV room while I was gone, so they could just watch TV and enjoy themselves. And I say, what is going on? Didn't you get the letters and the instructions I gave you? He goes, yeah, we did. He says, let me tell you, they were really good, some of them too. In fact, they were so good, do you know what? Every Friday, we have a group that gets together and we do nothing but study your letters. And he says, and people, they enjoyed them so much that some of the people are even memorizing some of the sentences. There was one or two guys that actually memorized a whole letter. Can you believe it? There's great stuff in those letters. Okay, you got my letters, you studied them, you meditated them, you even memorized them, but did you do what was in them? Do? We're supposed to do something? We didn't do anything about it. Does that sound a whole lot like God's church in the 20th century? Listen, folks. Jesus calls us out of the crowd, out of the norm, and calls us into discipleship. But in order to become a disciple, we must do something. You must cross over with Jesus to the other side. You must step out of the crowd and get in the boat with Jesus and be a devoted follower of His. Or otherwise, I'm going to tell you, this church is going to die. Times are changing, and we need to change with us. So when Jesus calls us, we must not hesitate. In fact, one of the people afterwards that we read about in our text, they came up to Jesus and he said, Jesus, I want to be that kind of follower, but let me bury my father first. And we think Jesus was kind of cruel because Jesus said, no, follow me now. Let those who are spiritually dead care for their own dead. Man, Jesus was harsh, wasn't he? No. In that day when a man or woman died, they buried him within 24 hours. They didn't have him sitting around for a long time. So if he's already dead, Jesus would have been happy to wait till they put daddy in the ground. That was just an Eastern culture phrase that says, let me go work in my daddy's business until my daddy, who may not even be sick, dies someday. Then I'll get my inheritance and I'll have the earthly goods that I need to do. And once I'm where I want to be in this life, once I've taken care of myself, then Jesus, I'll go follow you. Do you know what Jesus said about that stuff? Nah. Jesus says, follow me now. He was in the present imperative tense in the Greek language, follow me. Today, this hour, I want you to be my disciple. Folks, listen. The call of Jesus becomes before anything else in our lives. Our obedience has to be a priority over anything else in our lives. God doesn't want you to neglect your family, but God doesn't want your family to come in between you and being a follower of His. Jesus always has to come first. And so everybody who is a Christian, as this culture is changing, as we are in postmodernism, where it's going to take real relationships with each other and with other people for there to be a change in the church, we got to ask the question, are we really putting Jesus first? Are we really about making followers and disciples of His? Francis Chan has written some great books about disciple making. He draws thousands and thousands of people every time he speaks. But the most important thing he does is his one-on-one relationships, making disciples with just the people he knows. And he's come to learn that. I want you to watch a little short clip, if you can, of Francis Chan talking about discipleship, please.
I think discipleship is so huge. Making disciples is huge. And I think Satan is going to do everything he can to keep us from making disciples. He'll get us studying for sermons, which isn't a bad thing. He'll get us in Bible studies, which obviously isn't a bad thing. Worship services, whatever. You know, doing this, doing that, speaking to masses of people, writing books. Those are all good things. But the primary calling is to go and make disciples. That's the commission. It's which means going to people who don't believe. That's what Matthew 28 was about. It's like going to the people who don't know about the resurrection. Here's the resurrected Christ, and go make disciples of all the nations. Baptize them. They don't even know about the baptism of the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Teach them to obey everything I commanded you. Like, that's Jesus' rising from the dead command to us. And so Satan's going to want us to do anything but make disciples. Even those of us who are in ministry, he'll keep us busy doing services, doing this or that. Just make sure you don't make disciples, because that's what's going to change the world. And so even Jesus, you look at Jesus, he could have been doing a lot of great things. He did a lot of great things, but he always made time. The priority was discipleship. The priority was saying, no, I'm going to be gone soon, and these men are going to have to carry out the work. And so he took these basically unbelievers and saying, you know what? Walk with me. Let me explain to you everything I know. Let me teach you how to obey. Watch my life. Walk with me. See my life. And too often in the church, we don't get to that point. We don't let people in. We'll have Bible studies, let them share a few prayer requests, but we don't walk with them. And Satan doesn't want you to walk with him. He wants your house private. You know, he wants you to have some privacy. Keep all those people out, even pastors. Keep them out, because you're tired of, you know, get. And it's become like this job or this part-time little occupation or hobby, rather than going, oh, this is the most important thing that I do, make disciples. And so for me, I realized that was a pattern in my life. While, yes, God has called me to the masses, and I will do that. He's called me to teach the Word of God, and I will do that. But he wants me to make disciples. And the last few years, I've been focused on that more than ever, really digging deep into people's lives and letting them see my life and getting the smaller groups, which isn't as sexy as the thousands and thousands, and it isn't as glamorous, and no one's going to know about this stuff. You just do it. And man, I am seeing God do some amazing things through some of these disciples now, and things I never would have. I don't know why I doubted him, but all my life I felt like, oh, I gotta do it, because I know God will use me. But to just go, no, you know what, God's gonna use other people, and let me be more of a coach now, and let me disciple them, you know, at this point in my life, and let their ministries expand. I kind of said, you know, I'm done being Kobe. I want to be Phil Jackson or Greg Popovich. You know, I want to be the guy that coaches and goes, no, go play. It's your time now. Let me just work with these people. And I just love it. I love them being a part of my family. I love them being a part of my life. I love working side by side with them and seeing what God's doing through them. I just wouldn't trade it for the world right now.
You know, Northeast Christian, I just, as your friend, and I've watched over a number of years everything that takes place over here as well, and I pray for you. And I got to say, you are at a place, I think, in your history that's going to be better than anything you've ever seen in the past. I love Seth and the other people you got on your staff. They're good people. But if you're going to sit around and wait for them to do it all, that's not fair. That's not right. And if you think someday maybe you could upgrade the building, that's going to attract people, no, that's not how it's done. Folks, listen. It is about being a follower of Jesus yourself and then taking the time to invest your life into other people's lives, to look at them, to see them. It's not about getting hundreds or thousands of people in the seats. It's about how many people do you know individually that are close to you, that you are reaching out to and caring for. Let me put it this way. Let's say your life that you're going to give to God is going to be represented by a $1,000 bill. I know they don't make them anymore, but they made them up until 1945, and there's a few of them out there still. But let's say your life represents a $1,000 bill. because it's worth something. And you say, okay, God, I'm going to give you my life, and I'm going to come to church, and I throw that bill down on the table, and I say, God, here's my life, and it's worth something. And we think sometimes that's what it means to become a Christian. We just throw down the $1,000 bill once. But do you know what God does? I think what God is saying to us through his word is he's taken that $1,000 bill and he's sliding it back across the table. And he's saying, Roger, you go take that big bill that you threw down the table and go down to the bank and cash it in quarters and then bring it back. So here I am, got this big load of quarters now. And I come back and what I'm learning is this. God says, do you see that young person over there that nobody's given direction to in their life? Go spend a quarter. Do you see this neighbor of yours that has a drinking problem? Go spend 50 cents on him and connect with a relationship with him. Do you see these families that are struggling and difficulties with little children and balancing their lives up and they just need somebody to mentor them a little bit? Go spend some change on them. You want a great church? You want to be a disciple of Jesus? Go spend your life a little bit at a time. Don't worry about the big stuff. Don't worry about the programs. They don't work anymore. The only thing that's going to build God's church is relationships that are genuine with each other. Look at people. Love each people. Spend your life as a follower of Jesus. God bless you. Would you stand and pray with me?